All right, so we're holding and we're continuing in the Chafetz Chaim. We're holding in Simin Tes Vav. V'im hu yasam el almana, if he's unfortunately a orphan, or an almana is a widower, or a widow. Afilu him ashir, even if they have a lot of money, v'sipar b'knusim b'fneim, and you speak in front of them. Even if they're very wealthy, or they're very, they seem to be in a very established position in life, if you speak negatively in front of them, over oid alav achir, you also have transgressed prohibition. And that pasuk is call a man of yosam lesani. Should not cause pain to them. She is here. Hatoyer bazesh leil lehakniton or lehachiv liban b'shum minsar. You're not allowed to cause any tinge of pain. This is a very, very interesting thing. If you have somebody who again is seems to be ostensibly has it together, has it fully up, you never know anybody's story. You never know anybody's background. Mm-hmm. So of course, someone who literally went through a traumatic experience like losing a parent or God forbid lost a spouse. So they may have it all together, but you touching on that, we spoke about last time, being like, you don't want to be that person who's like, you know, causes that negative interaction. You don't want to be that individual that you have no idea what you're touching on. But this is a, like a literally example. I mean, for that, you don't even, you have no clue. So it's just purely, you know, just taking a chance and maybe you're hurting someone, maybe you're not. Here, it's pretty ostensibly obvious that someone who's gone through that experience, you're opening up a wound that never really closes. I mean, anybody that's lost anybody, anybody that's lost a parent, anybody that has lost a spouse, has been through a traumatic experience, that pain is still always there. It's covered, but never goes away.
So is he asking, real quick, is he saying that the widow or the orphan is wealthy and they're being treated this way?
I mean,
despite the fact that they're wealthy, whatever.
Even if they are have it all together, they seem to have everything taken care of. They have no worries, no concerns. Nonetheless. Because you think, when you think or you conjure up the image of an orphan, what do you think of? You think of, can I have some porridge? Like he's sitting like in a literal, you know, orphanage.
Right.
No connection to anything. Has no family. Has nobody that cares about him. He's treated like a basically a nothing and a nobody.
Right.
No, you could be literally having hand being waited on hand and glove, but like literally being taken every single one of their needs, and nonetheless, there's still a raw emotional pain within them that you just don't want to be the person to touch on that, to cause that tinge of sadness. And again, it's a tinge, mishum bishum minsar, any form of pain, causing them and opening up that wound. It's never a good idea. And this punishment is that I have shown my wrath towards them and I killed them. Again, this is in reference to, I believe, what is it in reference to? Can you tell me?
Amos 22:23.
Oh, right. So clearly someone who has caused that wrath and pain, caused that pain towards an orphan and towards a widower, is you're messing around with some real stuff. Hashem is going to say, you know what? If you're going to do that, I'm going to strike back at you. Three times worse. Oh. There's also a prohibition of what's chanufa?
Manipulation or flattery.
Oh, flattery. We need to say, so the technical definition of the word flattery means that somebody's doing an avera and you go to them, you're doing okay, you're fine, you're great. Right? For people who are very cynical, they'll call that kiruv. Obviously, it's a cynical comment. But the idea is that when somebody is in a bad place, you're in order to curry favor with them, in order that you should have some level of hashpa on them, which means like some level of influence upon them. So you want to be able to position yourself in that way. So you say, you're doing great, you're fine, you're amazing. And the answer is no. So a lot of times, what we call positive criticism is really just. It's really just strengthening bad behavior, and it's to be honest, a lot of people don't want to approach that because they say, "Oh, what do you mean? But I can't be negative today. No one's allowed to give mustard today." So yeah, fine, you don't give mustard, but no one said that then veers into supporting bad behavior, and I think that's kind of the mature line that a person has to figure out for themselves and for how they relate to others. I mean, just because we don't negatively put down other people, and God forbid we never should, and cause pain. It shouldn't ever enter into the world of also giving the suggestion that what they're doing is okay. Mm. Right? We have to have principles. Doesn't mean you're quiet. Doesn't mean, it's a very nuanced idea, and it's very hard to practically apply. But the thought, we should at least be trying to figure out where is the, on the spectrum, where we should be. Meaning, again, just because I'm not telling you you're horrible, you're terrible, you're nothing, doesn't mean I should be saying you're amazing, you're best, you're the greatest thing ever since sliced bread. Both are not true.
are you allowed to be like, hey, look, you should not be doing this?
It depends. If you have a strong, that will be called tochacha. That will be called giving mussar. So in that, you have to have a strong relationship with the person. And today, nowadays, we say that unless you really are 100%, fully, full on have that strong relationship, you should veer on, you know, err on the side of caution and probably withhold judgment or criticism. But what I'm suggesting is just because we're withholding criticism doesn't mean you go the opposite end and say, well, you're amazing, you're the best, you're the greatest thing ever.
You're doing a great thing.
Because there's a lot of people who aren't, you know. Abraham Lincoln once said,
I was thinking that the whole time we were talking.
He said that God must love the mediocre. He made so many of them, right? Okay. Is that what you're referring to?
That's not what I was thinking.
Oh, that.
Because it might have been not him who said it. I don't know who said this, but it's a very famous quote, which is like, evil wins or something like that when good people do nothing or something like that.
Oh, I think I haven't heard that line before, but I'm sure
or something like that, something to. I'm butchering it, but that's the idea.
It's like, fine. It's okay. You're butchering it. We eat tonight.
Yeah.
Right. But what's the principle?
That's why I'm having a hard time. Right. Meaning, not a hard time, but like, I want to make sure I have the right. Because if you see something that's being done wrong, and then you are the one that's capable of maybe stopping it.
Correct.
Saying, hey, like,
in essence, it's like on your shoulders the fact that it's continuing. It's true. There is such a concept like that.
So,
but you have to be very smart in how you apply it. And like you try as very much as possible to err on the side of caution. Unfortunately, more often than not, most things are not taken in a healthy, positive way. And more often than not, it's not given in a healthy, positive way. I mean, we have to really go over our words. Like, you have to be like an editor of a book. You know, you have to go like through 5, 7, 8, rough drafts. Like, really. And then most likely just throughout the entire book anyway, because that book is probably a terrible book.
I'm going to give you a practical example.
Sure.
So everybody, you know, it's like in the shul, you see things that get messed up. They're all over the place.
Right.
You know, all the things. And the kids are all over the place doing all kinds of things.
Right.
But nobody will dare say anything to any of the kids.
Right.
Because
they don't want to say nothing.
But at the same time,
they're not wrong, but at the same time, like, but so what are we going to do? We're living in a playground? There has to be a balance.
But then they complain, like, wow, this is terrible. Yeah, well, somebody's going to have to. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So
I tell myself two things. Number one, first of all, you're right. Someone doesn't have to clean it, and oftentimes that falls on your shoulders.
Right.
So there's two elements to that idea, which is number one, to accept the reality that thank God we're in a place that Baruch Hashem has kids in a shul. There's a lot of conservative temples that are empty cemeteries. So listen, we're in a good place. So we're in a really good place. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, you're right, and it's really frustrating. But also at the same time, when a person enters themselves into, let's say, the work of the klal, which is basically the terminology for you're doing, you know, community service, then that also comes with the territory. You're also going to be like, hey, well, you think it's take care of it? And it's just, yeah, I accepted this. This is part of the role. Meaning, in order to have that blessing of children running around and making a mess and da-da-da, you also have to appreciate that this is the job. And like, part and parcel of that is that I have that beautiful schus to maintain that. So it's looking for the positive in it. I hope it takes away a lot of the toxicity and frustration, because more often than not, and you know this better than me, which is when you've come to embrace the challenge, you're more likely to be able to handle the challenge.
Well, the point of trying, the point I'm trying to make is when it comes to the speech.
Like, what should you say?
Let's say the same person, the same people. I'm not specific, but my complaint about this being like this will watch the kids do it and not say nothing.
Right. Yeah, you're right. 100%.
Right? Yeah, so then does the person like say, hey, you know, maybe you guys should.
Normal thing and a very totally acceptable thing in the world of what is like community service, which is that when you decide to do something, everybody has 20,000 reasons why it's not the best way. You shouldn't be doing that like this. It should be like this. It's like the constant response internally within ourselves, and I'm speaking for myself, is just like, well, you want it, you do it. And the answer is that is obviously the easy answer, and it's definitely the true answer, because if you want it done way, then, you know, if you want something done right, do it yourself. But the point I'm trying to hit over here is trying to think more internally and not externally. All the thought process is thinking externally. You're not going to get anywhere externally. Mm-hmm. You only can control that which is internal within yourself. Is that I can only fix what's inside myself. And me being able to reframe and say, you know, but this is part of the cloud. When I came and I accepted this position, I have to know that this is what's part of it. And I embrace that, because I ultimately know that the value of what I'm doing trumps the annoyance and frustration of like, dude, just do it yourself. And the more often you let that grate on you, and then you're right, you're going to end up finding yourself pretty much out of a big schuss. Mm-hmm. Part of the schus is handling that. You know who had the same issue? Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu complained to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, these people are driving me crazy. The Jews have had, we've been like this for thousands of years. The difference is that we still talk about Moshe, and the people there, they're part of a general group called Klal Yisrael, but we don't talk about the specific people anymore. Uh-huh. So do you want to be remembered as Moshe Rabbeinu, or do you want to be like the little people? And you know who is appointed after Moshe Rabbeinu? Who was appointed after Moshe Rabbeinu as the leader of the Jewish people?
Yehoshua.
Joshua. Why? What did Yehoshua do? He set up the shenders and the benches and the tables in the base Medrash. That's what the Medrash says. His greatest schus was, we have a lot of schus, but his most famous is that he was Mesadr the Safsali base Medrash, that he would literally pick up and put the chairs back. You know, I had my uncle in Eretz Yisrael. I didn't have to set up a table in my life. If I ever started moving a table, my tummy would run over. He's like, no, Rabbi, let me do it for you. And nowadays, I come to Eretz Yisrael, the table's not set up, so what do? I put the table up, and it was there. And did it bother me the first week? Absolutely, it did. I was like, whoa, this is not fair. Who do they think? Yeah. And I realized, wait a minute, no, this is the bracha of being in this position, of being, making time. And you know what? It's my schutz. And I'll punch anybody who takes it. Okay, I have to run.